It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Check it out!
So what is that?
Well, you know how they say dress for the job you want. And you know how I've always wanted to be a 7-year-old Japanese child. Well,
yeah.
Here we are.
There you go. Huh.
No, this is, no offense to my wife, the best birthday present I got this year. I got a lot of good ones. This is the best one. And this was from my mom. It's called an hoodie. It's hoodie without the H.
Oh.
And what happened was, at New Year's Eve, a friend showed up wearing a thing that kind of looked like a Snuggie or something, but it was like a sort of a robe on them with sleeves, and it was all like soft and fluffy and things, and it was sort of camel colored. And it was a hilarious, I'm sure it's something you're not supposed to wear outside, but it looked great. And I had mentioned to Trish, I was like, I'm kind of envious of that garment. So then when my mother was asking my wife for birthday ideas, she told her about these hoodies. But so my wife is the one who gave her the idea, but my mom's the one who picked out the pattern. And I'm kind of surprised. I mean, it's very me, but I didn't know that she knew that. So it's just lots of kitties and they're all doing different things, eating tacos and sleeping and all sorts of stuff. And it's on the person I saw, they are much smaller than me, so it kind of looked like a rope. On me, it's very much like a shirt. Like it's a hoodie, basically, but it's all soft and fluffy. And like the inside is all that fluffy stuff, like in here. Mm. And I love it, and I've been wearing it all the time. It caused someone in the drive-thru at Taco Bell to call me ma'am, which I found hilarious. To be fair, I was wearing a face mask, so my beard was kind of hidden. Also, I wore it shopping to Hy-Vee one time, and three completely unrelated people at different times complimented me on it in one shopping trip. So there was a young woman who was very taken with it and wanted to talk to me about it. There was a woman about my age who just said she loved it while she walked past. And then there was a young man who worked there who, as I walked past, was like, I love your shirt. And I was like, thank you. So I have been wearing this almost all the time, which is surprising if you know me, because I get very warm very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been surprising me too. I would put it on and tell them too hot. I'm like, I'm not too hot. And what I think I have discovered is it's not too warm as long as I'm not doing anything, because it is made out of the most artificial of fibers. It is very soft, but like it's made out of the same thing as the He-Man toys I had growing up, I am sure. So it does not breathe. But it's perfectly comfortable. And in fact, it's been cold enough. I wear this when I'm sitting on the couch normally because I'm too cold otherwise. Mm. I've got stuff underneath, but it's not as warm. So I wear this most of the time when I'm on the couch. But if I do anything like go shopping or doing housework very quickly, I get very sweaty and it's awful. So I don't do it for that. But yeah, so it's my hoodie. But I got a lot of good presents this year.
Good.
My mom kind of went else? For a smorgasbord of things. And some of them were misses. Some of them were hits. Some of them she literally said, I know you don't like this kind of thing, but I wanted to get it for you anyway. And guess what? I didn't like that kind of thing. She's weird that way. I got seasonings. I got a lot of seasonings. My wife got me a collection of three tins from Japan a particular spice blend that is used, and it has a name, but I can't remember what it is. And it one is just that, and then one is a ramen, a version for ramen specifically, and one is a version with yuzu added to it. And unfortunately, everything on it is in Japanese, so I'm not actually sure which is which. And it's, but you know, with seasonings, taste them and then go from there. So we'll see. Yeah. I also got from my mother several things of smoked, like, seasoned salts.
Oh.
To grill with and stuff like that. I'm actually gonna make burgers tonight. I think I'm gonna try out some of them. And then my wife also got me. She gets me a lot of cool stuff from Spice House. Are you familiar with Spice House?
No.
Spice House is, as far as I know, not a chain or anything. It is a shop in Chicago that I've been to that just does spices. But you can order tons of shit online. And we have ordered many different, like, spice blends and different things like that. And she got me a box of 4 popcorn flavoring powders.
Mm.
And so one is kind of a garlic salt with a little cheese blend in it. One is just like powdered cheddar cheese. One is a sort of a spicy one. It's called Vulcan salt, and it's, you know, got a little cayenne and other stuff in it. And then one that we actually tried on popcorn last night, it's called Gateway to the North. And it's basically if Canada was a flavor. I believe the ingredients are powdered maple syrup, brown sugar, garlic, onions, kosher salt, black pepper.
Mm.
And you wouldn't think, but the Canadians are really good at savory and spicy. And it's taste. Even Trish, not usually into the mixing those two, she's like, I don't hate it. I could eat more of this. I don't think she would choose it, but it's not bad. So yeah, that was real fun. I got this. I got some very soft, warm socks. I got the greatest piece of comedy I've ever encountered in my life.
Wow. Yeah.
It's the funniest thing that has ever existed. I'm not entirely sure it's on purpose, but it's the funniest thing that ever happened. I'm going to show it to you.
Oh, okay.
Because I know it's here because I just showed it to my gaming group on Tuesday night in this exact same scenario. Sorry, I got a lot of crap over here. You know how, like, you're like, okay, this is important stuff, so I'm going to set it on the spot nearby, and then eventually you have a very large stack of supposedly important stuff? That's yes. What I got going on over here.
I saw your an Instant Pot something or other there. For
yeah, time. That was all the instructions for the Instant Pot. I was cleaning up today in the kitchen. I also got this, which is basically a weird plastic Jenga game from Japan where all the pieces are made to look like sushi.
Mm.
It's very strange, but Trish thought it was adorable, so she got it. Okay, so got this birthday card from my wife's sister and her family, not the youngest one that you kind of know, Steph, you've met her. This is Beth, the next one up, the middle daughter, basically, because there's 3 daughters and Trish is the oldest. And she has a husband and 2 kids, and I probably have talked about them before. And they always send me a birthday card, which is mostly Beth sort of writes it and they all sign it because Beth's very crafty and art, and so like it has lots of, see, it's done in colors and there's stickers and everything like that. And this is a birthday card in here, and it's pretty normal. It's just, you know, the writing stuff and things like that and whatever. But also included was this. This is a folded piece of paper. It is folded. I don't think it's a full piece, but it is folded in roughly sixths. It's not taped or anything. On it, it has handwritten, in parentheses for some reason, eye protection. Made me a little nervous. I was like, is something really reflective going to be in there? And like, I have to. But you open it up, and inside are 2 loose googly eyes.
Mm.
And there is no, that's it. Like, there's no context at all.
Okay.
There's no, this isn't an inside joke we have. There's not something else. Like, this was it.
That's it.
And I think it's the funniest thing I've experienced in my life. I'm worried to compliment her directly on it because I'm worried I'm going to find out there's context. And no matter what it is, it will be less funny. It'll still probably, but like as right now, I'm just like, yeah, that's what it said. It's what it is. Eye protection. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. I love it. I love it so much.
Wow.
I actually have already come up with a possible contextual theory. I'm really loath to talk to her about it because I'm like, once there's a reason for it, it's not nearly as funny. Right now, hilarious.
Pretty funny.
I probably got more things I don't really remember. I mean, it was almost a week ago. Our last episode was the day before. Oh, I did get a nice cake delivered to my door by a gentleman and also with balloons attached to it.
Hmm.
It was from a place in Coralville that apparently is a chain. This is the only one I ever saw. Everything Bundt Cake.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yes, and it is driving me crazy because the pun contradicts the thing. Because it's and that's... I've been thinking about, I want to say I've been thinking about this for days. I've been thinking about this since the first time I saw it, which was quite a while ago, that it's a store. I'm like, but then use everything but cake. Oh, like, yeah, I think it might be wrong. I think maybe it should be illegal to have made that pun. And in general, dangerous to make puns about butt cake. I'm now realizing because it'll flip it around on you. But it was a snickerdoodle flavored Bundt cake with lovely stripes of cream cheese frosting on it. Was real, real good.
So
kinda on a snickerdoodle kick right now, I think.
So Bundt cake.
Yes.
Now, does it have to be shaped a very particular way or does it just have to be round with a hole in the middle or does it just have to be, what makes a Bundt
cake? I am so glad you asked. Because the day it arrived, we had this discussion. So, of course, I had to look it up.
Yeah, right.
And I've learned a few things about Bundt cake.
Okay, good.
First of all, it is loose. The original idea is loosely based. It's called Bundt cake because it's loosely based on a specific type of German cake whose name is eight syllables with Bundt thrown in there somewhere. It's a German word, you know. And there is no specific recipe for Bundt cake. Bundt cake is any cake that is made in that shape of pan.
Okay. Okay.
However, the nature of that shape of pan, there's way more surface area. Mm-hmm. And so it cooks, the heat is distributed more evenly through the entirety of the cake. Right. So one could argue that strange recipes notwithstanding, the consistency is different.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah.
And then fun fact, apparently Bundt cake, as a Bundt cake pan is copyrighted by someone. So in some places you will find where they're like a toroid shaped cake pan or they'll have flange circular cake pan, I think is another one. They'll have to come up with slightly different names. Because Bundt cake pan is apparently copyrighted. So,
okay, but so all of the angel food cakes that I ever had were circular with a hole in the middle, but I never thought of those as Bundt cakes because they didn't have the ridges and all that other stuff.
Yes, 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 yes. And I have not researched angel food cake, but yeah, to me, that is a very distinctive sort of trapezoidal toroid and it has no flange. Yeah, the flanges are a common part of it. I don't know if it's required. But the fact that it's not just toroid, they're sort of scalloped. And in a lot of cases, extra flanges. I think that is an important part of making the distinction. But it says nothing about the cake inside, other than the fact that it will bake a little different because of that surface area. But there's none. Yeah. Right. Whatever kind of fucking cake you're putting in there is still Bundt cake. Because that was the thing. I was like, why then? Like, if it's just cake, why are we obsessed with this specific shape? And I don't know that I really answered that, but I got all the facts I could. I mean, somebody out there do a graduate dissertation on this. Beth, I'm pretty sure you have mentioned that raising those two kids is not enough to do. So if you want to do some postdoc work on the nature of why we eat bundt cake, William will be happy to finance that. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Cat Podcast, the only podcast in the world where my birthday happened. I don't know how the other podcasts did it, but literally within their universes, I never had a birthday. I cannot imagine what effort it took, and I cannot tell you how much it hurts my feelings. Because they all did it in the world. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 567. So we're one step closer. One step closer within 100, last week within 100 of 666. So,
all right. One step closer. Let's go, Satan. Let's go, Satan.
It seems weird. I mean, 666 is going to happen and we won't do anything about it.
Well, here's the thing. So, I'm so sorry, people. As with so much scriptural issue, mistranslations happen apparently. And I think 666 number of the beast is in the Apocrypha anyway, so it's not the real stuff God said, but I think I got this from QI, which in my wife's opinion means it is slightly less reliable than Wikipedia, but I believe on an episode of QI this it was a mistranslation and the number of the beast is actually 616.
I have heard the English versions or translations, everyone that I know of the Book of Revelation does have 666 in it. And I've heard many times that that's a mistranslation. And I have also heard different numbers for the mistranslation. I don't know.
But I don't know what regardless, the best thing to it is 667, neighbor of the beast. It's best. I love that joke so much. I've always loved that joke. All right. So for those of you just joining us, we do this every week. We talk about my birthday presents and make fun of Holy Scripture every week. So I hope you're going to enjoy it because it's exactly what happens. Also, we have a hat is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people who want us to talk less about birthday presents and apocryphal scripture, write us emails so that we'll talk about that instead. By the way, it has a giant like hoodie pocket in front, like you would expect. It's really awesome. And it's also lined with fuzzy, which is a little weird, but whatever. They write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever they feel like. And the hat all on its own magically forwards that email to us. And then we'll read them here and talk about them, probably, maybe, if we feel like it. So, how's your week?
School, basically. We did finish off The Expanse. You know, it had its season... It's series finale, actually. They say they're done.
Did it seem to come to a resolution? I know the books are not ending, but...
No, it didn't really. But yeah. It did. So the last three books that in the series so far, before those last three, there's a time jump, a considerable time jump. And the ending of the series on television corresponds to that. All of
those. Yeah, so they don't have to recast.
Or whatever it is. So all of those plot points that end in the books before the time jump is essentially how the show ends. All that stuff. So even if the show wanted to go on, if it was going to still follow the books, which it mostly has, that they would also have to do the time jump. So
Yeah.
And it's not a small one either. I mean, some of the same characters are in the books later, but it's still a significant jump. I mean,
enough that you'd have to recast in most cases. Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, more and more I'm thinking I probably won't ever watch this. I mean, we tried a long time ago. Probably won't ever watch the show. I may read books sometime instead.
I'm thinking about it because the books sound better.
I finished the last of the Wayfarers novels by Becky Chambers. Loved it. Those four books, that whole series, definitely, I think, constitute currently my favorite books of all time.
Oh, wow.
Really love them. Really would like to try and read them to Trish. I don't know. A lot of sci-fi jargon in there, places that could make it tricky, but I think I want to give it a shot. We'll see.
Hey, do you like, you liked The Mandalorian, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do enough. You like it without, do you like it without Baby Yoda in it, or does, is Baby Yoda, I mean, a big draw?
I find it weird that they would think about continuing it without Baby Yoda, although it sounds like they've decided not to. I didn't like it just for Baby Yoda. Baby Yoda was far and away the best part of it, but no. We're gonna watch Book of Boba Fett. We're definitely gonna watch Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah. Oh,
never mind then. There was something I was gonna say about all of that, but I won't.
No, I've heard it. Basically Book of Boba Fett is pretty much Mandalorian quality.
I mean, I think so. Yeah. I liked the last episode we just watched. It was pretty good. So
yeah, no, I think we'll definitely watch that.
Okay.
We are 3-4, I don't know. Some number, a few episodes into Foundation.
Oh. Okay.
Have you watched Foundation?
Yeah. Remember, I think I told you that it was, we finished it and it was finished so that you'd know you could start it without worrying about running into.
Yeah. Do you remember these conversations? I pretty much, as soon as we stop recording, I forget who you are. none of this is there.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about it being on. We didn't talk anything about the plot or anything going on.
I mean, I have things to say, but it's still early. And you're welcome to also have things to say, but of course you need to be careful to walk around spoilers.
Right.
I don't like it. That's the short answer. Still going to watch it all. It is absolutely gorgeous and very well acted. I will give it that. The plot, not all of the plot, a great deal of the plot does not exist in the original Foundation trilogy.
Right.
Or at least I should say, a great deal of the plot was like the first half of the first chapter of the first book of the Foundation trilogy. I do not know, because I know there was a prequel trilogy written and a sequel trilogy written. So it is definitely possible that a lot of the story that I don't recognize is coming from that prequel trilogy. I would be willing to bet you read those books and you might know, or you might at one time have known.
Yeah.
They are also changing a lot. It's funny because when it happened, I realized they get to make up like all the technology because it was the 50s. And so they were real vague and confused on how shit would work. And now they can get into detail. And it's a lot of it is like, yeah, no, this is like recorded futurist stuff. And this is also common sci-fi tropes and things, but they get to build it how they want because it's not really in the books.
Right.
And just when every time I think that they're just going to completely throw out the plot of the books, suddenly I'm like, oh, this is your version of that. Okay. They keep doing like, oh no, this is nothing like the books. And then they touch a particular story beat. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is just your reimagining of that thing. Okay.
Right. Right.
I'm not super fond of that. The reason I don't like it is two reasons, because there are sort of two plots going. There's the stuff at the Foundation and there's the stuff at the center of the Empire. And I hate the stuff at the center of the empire. For all that Lee Pace is an incredible actor, I hate it. And I've been trying to formulate why. And I think I understand. I don't want a story about the difficulties of having power from the perspective of the people who have power. I don't give a shit that it's tough at the top. And I certainly don't want to spend a lot of time trying to sympathize with that. You're the emperor of the galaxy. I will not feel bad for you. And I'm tired of you trying to make me feel bad for you. I think that's what it is. I think all I know is I hate that whole storyline. Again, brilliantly acted, really gorgeous set pieces, wonderfully done. I fucking hate that whole story. The other side, I also kind of hate. And a lot of it has to do with they've made the technology way more advanced than anybody would have thought of in the 50s. And unknowingly, they accidentally solved a lot of problems that they think they still have. There are a lot of issues that they're fighting over and like arguing about. And I'm like, no, based on the technology you've shown us, this should not be a problem at all. You should not be fighting over this.
Yeah, I think I know exactly what you're talking about.
And I can toss it out real, real easy this way. Research budget. I'm like, we have Wikipedia now. It might be a stretch and there might be some minor exceptions, but I am confident that here in 2022, we have electronic record of all the history, customs, and cultures known to us on the planet. Again, possible minor exceptions. Thousands of years in the future, you got that shit covered. You're not like, oh, we need to figure out what we can spend resources on to learn, to save. They keep talking. And that's the thing. I'm like, I'm telling Trish, I'm like, it was a long time ago, but the foundation's job was not to learn shit. The foundation's job was to already have all the shit and then not get destroyed for 1,000 years. That was their deal.
The Encyclopedia Galactica is what it was called.
And it was done because it's there. Like, so much of this is, oh, we have to decide what things we think are most important, and is a very interesting social concept if you were remotely in a situation where that was the case. And that wasn't the case in the 1950s version. It sure as shit ain't the case in this version.
Right.
And we spend a lot of time and energy on it, and it annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah, I also found that. I didn't know why the people who wrote it thought that that would be plausible to anybody. But
also, and this may get resolved, this series has a main character. It is not a main character I recall at all from the books. Like, a lot of things, they use names that I think I heard once, but this character I don't remember really being a thing. And an episode or so ago, they did a major twist with that character and then have not come back to it at all. And I don't know why. And it seems superfluous and it's annoying the shit out of it. I am sure it will eventually come back because that would be insane for it not. But at this point, it's just annoying.
I think I know the character you're talking about and the plot twist. This character was in the books. Is pretty much has the same role. But
it feels way bigger.
Yeah, I would say it's a little bit bigger.
And it's also, the plot twist seems out of nowhere.
And is female. Wasn't female in the book.
I mean, yeah, that's cool. I mean, and there's a lot of colorblind casting in this. And that's great.
Right. So, yeah, they've done a lot too. And they've also, well, I won't get into that. But, yeah.
Well, and they've done a lot of stuff that you need to do if you're going to turn 1950s trilogy of books into a TV show. But I think actually this just makes the argument maybe you shouldn't have turned it into a TV show. if they had worked on an original property with this level of production values and this height of acting, it could have been amazing. This was not that deal.
Yeah, you've got a good point there. Overall, I liked it. There was one problem I had, but it's something that in future seasons they could address. So I'm not ready to write it off based on that problem yet. And that's a problem you haven't even come to yet.
Nope.
They changed a lot of things. Some things I understand the changes, some things I don't really. Although, like you, I agree, there is no way they could have brought it to television without changing so much that the stuff they changed that I don't think they needed to or that I don't like, it barely matters because all those other stuff had to be changed. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like you have to change so much.
Yeah. Well, and it's an awful lot like the movie Solo. The less you think about the original property, the more you will enjoy it.
Right.
Although that problem I have with the whole researching thing doesn't go away.
No, that's true. But the thing that there are things that I liked about the original Foundation and Empire and robot novels. And to me, I was ready and willing to see anything changed as long as you kept those two or three large themes. And mostly they have kept the things that I think are important again, except, maybe two. But I don't know, the future seasons will determine it. But if they have messed up these two things, I'm going to feel like, well, this really isn't even the same story. There's really no point even calling it Foundation.
I'm just assuming we don't get to second Foundation in this season, but I fucking hope we do sometime because that's one of the more interesting aspects.
Like, I can't speak to that one way or the other without giving away spoilers, obviously.
That's fine. That's fine.
But they do preserve some things, but there's, well, Dave Avid and I talked about this a little bit. And this doesn't have anything to do with spoilers. This has to do with the original series. So Isaac Asimov was a big student of history. He wrote a book, A History of the World. You know, it's about that thick or whatever. I have it. I've read a lot of it, actually. Have it downstairs. And when he did the Foundation series and the Empire series, that whole thing, he was, you know, it wasn't just a flight of fancy for him. He was kind of exploring, he was writing something that was a metaphor for world history and basing it on some things that he observed in world history. In a way, it was his own experiment in psycho history. So,
yeah, it was a very sociological piece of speculative fiction.
Right. And certain things that happen and in the order they happen in, they're not unimportant for the story. So if you're adapting it for a modern audience and you think, okay, well, we don't have to have these things happen in this order. Well, no, you do kind of, because it's meaningful that they happen that way. The whole idea of psychohistory doesn't work unless these things happen in this order.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If they don't, then psychohistory doesn't really mean anything in the story. It's just a word people throw around
and it's
meaningless.
Honestly, the books, they imperfectly use that concept.
Mm.
There are moments where it's like, how you have defined this discipline wouldn't be able to do the thing you did. The TV show is doing that much worse.
Mm. Mm.
The TV show is basically, I found a mathematical equation and now I'm fucking psychic all the time. Like I have a spidey sense.
Yeah, it's magic.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not supposed to be magic.
No. But the books had a fault with that too in places. There are some things that I'm like, there's no way that would do that. But it is much more noticeable in the TV show.
Yeah, I mean, I'll grant your criticism of the book is valid, but I still think from Asimov's perspective, he thought, except for some specific places that served a very different kind of narrative, that's what he thought. I think he almost believed in psych history that if we had enough people, foresaw big data and big data analysis in a way, if we had enough people and if we had the algorithms, it would be pretty easy to see things coming.
Although, according to my friends, since the advent of big data analysis, they have proven that couldn't happen, which
True.
By that. I'm still you're confused right as to how you could prove that, but supposedly, whatever. I do have to add one funny thing, and it, I guess, spoils the first 30 seconds of the first episode or whatever. But so in the Galactic Empire, they're clones, and they make three clones. And it's basically baby clone who's going to be the emperor someday, adult clone who is currently the emperor, and then old clone who is essentially a consigliere because he was the emperor before. And they call him Dawn, Day, and Dusk. And they always have three going. And when Dusk gets old enough, he dies, and then we get a new Dawn, and Dawn becomes Day, and so forth. And when we start, there are three actors playing the three roles, like you would expect, the middle one being played by Lee Pace. The story jumps many times in time. Mm-hmm. And consequently, the emperors age and or die and or new ones are born. And they have to come up with different actors for different phases. Some at one point, Dawn is old enough that he's not a little kid, so we had to have this teenage one or whatever. But when possible, because they're clones, we use the same actors. And initially, that is very confusing. And what I love is my brain focused on the character Lee Pace was playing in the first episode. So eventually, we skip forward, and he who had been playing Dusk is now, or had been playing Day, is now aged to Dusk and is played by the actor who played Dusk before. And Dawn, who was a little kid, has aged to being Day and he's played by Lee Pace. But in my head, Lee Pace was the other one. So like literally when I was keeping track of him, the guy who was currently Dusk, who's the same actor who played Dusk before, I'm like, that's Lee Pace. And the guy who is literally being played by Lee Pace, not Lee Pace. Lee Pace is a character. And I'm following the arc of that character, which makes no sense, but it kind of amused me.
The guy who plays Dusk, he was Dresden has a ghost or something he talks to, right?
Bob.
In Dresden Files?
Is a spirit in a skull.
Okay, well, in the TV show, that guy plays
You're Bob. Shitting me.
No, Dusk.
That's him?
Plays Dusk plays Yeah.
I think if you put two of those, I know that guy. I would never have guessed it was that guy.
Oh.
Yeah, wow.
Pretty sure. I would.
I mean, he's got the beard and he's older now. I know. I'm going to look it up as soon as we're done. Wow. Yeah,
he was Bob in the Dresden Files.
That is very cool. I like that actor. I didn't realize.
I do too.
I like this actor, but.
He's doing a great job.
I'm a little torn how much I like the actor versus how much I like the character. Well, characters, like, it's so fucking weird because they're clones. It's very strange.
Well, it does make for a pretty interesting viewing experience. I think the idea itself, not from the books, is interesting. I think it's something that Asimov would have found fascinating, but no, that's not how it worked in the books. So
no.
That was the thing
I didn't know, because we didn't, like I said, the what I think will be the end result of this season with regard to the Galactic Empire, I think basically happened in the first like chapter of the first book, and then the rest was all Foundation stuff, and we're doing it at the same time sort of, but yeah, it's weird.
Well, the thing about making them clones and all everything that entails, they spend a lot of time in the show exploring that, which, since it wasn't in the book, that means they spend a lot of time in the show exploring things not in the book.
Yes.
And they're sacrificing other stuff.
But yeah.
Yeah. Now, some of it's very interesting, but, you know, whatever.
It's also, and this is a big one, the Foundation series is a sociological piece of speculative fiction on a celestial time scale. This TV show, as with kind of all scripted TV shows, is a personal drama. Those things are incredibly different. And I'm not going to say that there were no characters in the books, but they weren't the point in the same way. I mean, we're having romances and rivalries and shit. And I'm like, none of this has anything to do with anything.
Yeah.
And I don't enjoy that aspect. Again, I just don't think this was a property to do. You could have made something very similar. I don't think this was good, but we need to move off of that because they want to what?
They want to make a Game of Thrones out of it is what.
Yeah. Well, and it's a known property. You always do a known property if you can, because you draw in fans. It's how you make money. It's not necessarily how you make a good show. Right. So I have another thing I need to talk about. Then we need to get questions. And I do not want this to be an hour and a half like we've been lately, because I don't like you that well. Anyway, I have to tell you about something exciting. Maybe.
Okay.
You're going to find it. No one else is going to give a shit. You're going to find this interesting.
Oh.
So, you are in school.
I am, yes.
And you are studying to be a therapist.
Yes.
And as part of that, you're going to have to intern.
Yes.
Yes. So, this week, crazy week, I had an eye doctor appointment right too close to when my therapy was. So I'm like, can we change my therapy time to another time this week? And they're like, sure. She was like, we can move it to Thursday at a certain point. It was actually going to be right before this. I'm like, cool. And then later she wrote me back. She's like, I am so sorry. I forgot. I have a meeting then. Can we move it to a different time? How about this? Which was early Thursday morning. I'm like, that's cool too. And then on Monday, my eye doctor clinic called and said, we have to cancel and reschedule. They didn't say why, but something's going on. So that's rescheduled for way out there. So then I email my therapist back and I'm like, can we move it back to the original time? And she says, sure. She says, by the way, I'm getting an intern who's going to be around all spring. Are you cool with her sitting in on our stuff? And I said, yes, I am. And it's interesting. In fact, it'll be interesting to see, because my friend William, who she knows about, because I talk about you in therapy, spoilers, mostly openly weeping, is doing this and is soon going to have to do this exact thing.
Yeah.
And then I found out my therapist thinks spring includes January. Because on Tuesday, we did it on Zoom and the intern was there.
Mm.
And I was like, the fall? And I was like, okay, this is the first thing that makes me question your credentials as a therapist. January. And it apparently, I've been so far out of school, but it's called the spring semester.
Mm.
And so it's this whole time. And I'm like, okay, whatever. So she was there. And in fact, she said, she's like, so maybe William will be, maybe they know each other or whatever, but she's from U of I. Was like, no, sorry, William's going to a much worse school. They haven't met. But so they were there on the Zoom, and apparently the way it works is initially she's just there and listening, and like she didn't really say anything. She laughed at more of my jokes than my therapist did, so I already like her. But over time she will speak, and I think the idea is to hopefully, before the end is done, get to a point where she's sort of leading the sessions with my therapist still there. I think that's how, the way they described it, I think that's sort of the deal. Is originally she's just sort of going to listen to how it goes, and then she'll sort of dip her toes in a little bit, and then by the end it'll sort of be reversed, where, you know, her mentor is there watching and listening, but she's sort of, and she will have been there for weeks listening to me, so she'll have a sense of things. So I thought that was cool. and yeah, we'll see how that goes. And it's also one of those things, and it's funny, I tied it into my therapy. In my head, very few people would be comfortable doing that. My logic is, I met this stranger and I just started telling her all the shit about me and it's working out. We're just bringing in another stranger and I'll just tell her all the shit about me and it'll be fine. But in my head, very few people would. And one of the things that is, I'm like, why the fuck do I think other people can't like have the exact same reason? And the truth is, apparently most people are fine with it, because why wouldn't they be? I can see an argument being made against it, but most people are okay with it for the same reasons I am. And it's kind of stupid that I assume, no, I'm the only one who thought it through like that. So anyway, that's getting way too much into shit I'm working on. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Okay. I mean, we're told in when people talk to us about what internship's going to be like, they tell us that most people are fine with it for these reasons. And some of that relates
to be totally optional. If I had said no, thank you, then she just wouldn't be in my sessions.
That's right. And you know, a lot of people are already familiar with this kind of thing with their doctors. I mean, amazingly,
I get that a lot at the university.
Yeah. People go to the doctor. There's people in and out that they've never met before. And those people are asking them personal questions that they just answer. You might hear your doctor and or a nurse outside your room talking about your case quite loudly for everybody to hear. I mean, there's a sense that this is a personal thing and a private thing and all that. And yet there's a lot of things that happen that would indicate that it's not. And people just don't even worry about it. So,
yeah. It's all right.
Odd.
Give us an email.
Oh, okay.
Do it. Read it.
Go ahead. Did forward me an email from Jazz.
Hey, it's not us telling.
The subject is epic question. And the thing about that is she going to ask us a question about epic poetry or... Is it
Sorry. You don't play enough video games. That means the question is purple.
Oh, okay.
And it has higher stats than blue questions, green questions, and common questions. It's okay. Not as great as a yellow or orange question, but it's pretty good.
Okay. Here we go. My son and I were talking. Her email starts with my.
All right.
My son. My son and I were talking about why some of the people we know don't like Dune, the most recent one.
All right.
We decided that it has some features of the traditional epic that you don't often see in movies today, particularly characters that one doesn't identify with in the way one identifies with characters in a novel. There are epic characters that are more everyman figures like Odysseus, and given the time of the epic, the man is probably appropriate, but that's more the exception than the rule. Do you think there's something about our culture that makes the kind of novel character more intimate and identifiable, more familiar and comfortable for us than the epic hero? Oh, that's a good question.
I mean, full disclosure, my experience with epics is limited.
You always say that when she asks a question about epics.
She asks them a lot. I took an intro humanities class in college 20 some odd years ago, and I've seen a lot of different takes on Beowulf. That's pretty much it. But I mean, to me, the characters in an epic tale are plot devices. And yes, we get character traits, but it tends to be a very small number and a very, like, they're very four color in that, like, this guy is wise, this guy is brave, this guy is
sort of whatever. Archetypical in a way.
Yeah, and not particularly nuanced. And to me, the novel as an art form is where you go for nuance before you go so far as to get really sort of metaphorical and poetic. It's really, to me, novels are often very much about the characters. And I know there's a lot of plot involved, but that's why I read them, is it is the most you can drill down into a character unless you really start getting more symbolic.
Right. I mean, I think comic books for many years were in the epic mold. And I think fairly recent decades, comic book writers decided to make them more novel-like. In fact, we call them, we have graphic novels, because there was a time, and sitcoms were a little like this too, actually. There was a time where certain types of stories were episodic and the characters pretty much were the same from issue to issue or episode to episode. They were stock characters is really what they were. Mm-hmm. And you could jump in to any place of the story. They could be telling stories with this character for 50 years. You could jump in anywhere and you wouldn't be missing anything. It's not any continuity. There's not anything like that. But at some point, comic books, and I think, in TV shows, the only shows that were like that were soap operas. But now it seems like most people want things to be character driven. They want something that you can't just jump in the middle because there's a whole bunch of continuity. There's a whole bunch of story and there's going to be interactions that relate to something that happened 3 years ago that only the people who were watching or reading 3 years ago are going to know. So I do think that kind of storytelling that's sort of character driven and that's not episodic, that's, you're going through the whole arch of a person's life or whatever. I think that kind of is more popular now and does appeal to, look at the Marvel series of movies, right? Over a decade, lots of these movies, but someone could think if they didn't know better that this was an epic of some kind. And certainly the scale was epic, but it wasn't an epic. I mean, it was character driven. These characters have things going on. A lot of times you can't just watch one of the movies and know what's going on.
No, but it's also clunky as shit.
Yeah, that's true.
Because what it is each movie is its own epic episode. Mm. But then we have shoehorned in some shit to connect them. So those of us who watch all of them like idiots are like, oh, and that's, but nobody else can fucking sit down and watch one in isolation, or you can, you just have to ignore all of that stuff, which admittedly you can do because it's not the bulk of it, but it's ridiculous. Like it doesn't work well together. I don't remember which one, but there was a pitch meeting about one of them where they were like, will people who haven't watched the others get that's what that is? And the writer's like, I'm not, and he's like, just kidding. We gave up on people who don't watch all of them 5 years ago. I don't give a shit.
Right. So
yeah, no, it's the MCU. I mean, again, I think they've done it in a way that is good for money. I don't think they have done it in a way that is good for storytelling. And it really shows through because we've all talked about it. They're like the most common middle of the road review I have seen of an MCU movie, not one, many of them, is Marvel takes a really cool and unusual idea and turns it into another MCU movie. Because they do. That's what happens. And it's like an episode of a sitcom, but 2 hours long and not as intentionally funny.
Well, I think Jazz has a point in what she's saying. I do think that there's almost a continuum there between the epic and the novel. And there's a lot of places you can land in between. Some of those are going to work and some of those are going to figure out which one of these things you are and be that, because trying to be both or a mixture of both isn't working.
Well, and if they took the aspect of a novel in that we're trying and to give depth to our characters. I think you can do that. It just takes time, but you can fit that into an epic just fine. They're trying to fit the overarching story in there while still making everything fit into a perfectly self-contained episode, and it sucks. But the
maybe
idea
what you were
of doing
saying
both,
before
a lot of TV shows, I think, manage to do the epic, but also to bring out the characters more. And if you hit that blend just right, it can be really good.
Maybe what you were saying before about Foundation is that the books were written in an epic way, and it's hard to turn it into a TV show that's being presented in a novel way.
I think you're right. I wouldn't have used those words because I think saying it's an epic is oversimplifying, but I, for the sake of this discussion, I think that is correct. I think the elements we're talking about are there. And I mean, I'm one of those who really likes a lot of movies that a lot of other people don't like because absolutely nothing happens to them. It's just a character study of frequently of an ensemble when I enjoy better, but it's just like getting to know the depths of these characters and nothing actually happens.
Yeah. Right.
And
right.
My Dinner with Andre being one of the best examples. And I love those things. And that to me, that, I mean, I like those movies, but that's why I read novels, is for that kind of stuff. Don't get me wrong. I love a good adventure yarn, and I'm always obsessed with the mythology and all that kind of stuff. But to me, that is one of the distinctive things about novels that is hard to achieve outside of that. In a TV show, the only way you can really achieve it is by being on the air for fucking ever.
Yeah, right.
I will, yep. After the sixth, by the sixth season, I will have a sense of understanding of a character akin to a character in one standalone novel.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
It's written well enough.
Right, right. Huh. That's very interesting. I never really
now I have no idea how to apply this to the current iteration of Dune. Because as we all know, the main reason I didn't like it was I'm just like, we don't need to talk about Dune anymore. you have wrung all you can out of Dune for me. And also, let's all be honest, it was a fucking insane place to stop the movie. But, I mean, we didn't want the movie to be 5 hours long, so there you go. I need to pause just for a second. Eagle-eyed listeners will know why, but the rest of you, mystery. And we're back. Oh, shoot. I should put this back up for continuity purposes. So the editor has more to work with, you know.
Good.
I mostly only knew about that kind of continuity from watching a lot of British panel shows. Because it's all comedians and they'll do something real silly and then people are like, you have to stop that. Like, you have to. There was one where a guy had these mirror shades on it. It was this whole joke that he becomes a different cool guy when he's wearing it. And the host is like, hey, cool guy, you want to take those off? He's like, nah, I'm good. And after a while, he's like, okay, for continuity's sake, I'm going to need for you to take those off. So we finally did. So yeah, sorry about that, people. Needs must. So let's do another question.
Okay.
I don't know that unless you got more to say on that one.
No, that was a good one. I like it when Jazz asks things like that. The thing is, literature, I find literature gives more insight into humanity and human nature and human history than a lot of philosophy or history that was written at that time, you know, because it's all very biased, but the literature is really insightful.
Long ago, fairly early season in The Simpsons, there was an episode where she made a friend. There was a new girl, and she made a friend because the new girl was also like really smart and sort of ostracized for that or whatever. So they bonded over that. But then she went to visit their house and found out that like the whole family was hyper intellectual and really smart to the degree that like she seemed sort of dumb by comparison. And it actually involves her doing terrible things to sort of sabotage the other girls' school project so that she won't look as good or whatever. But is the thing, because like, yeah, they go to the house and the dad is like, oh, it's a pleasure to meet you. He's like, maybe you can play our game of anagrams with us. And she's like, what's anagrams? And the girl's like, we take the name of an actor and rearrange the letters to form a phrase that describes that actor. And the dad was like, I'll give one to you. It says Alec Guinness. And the girl thinks, and she's like, genuine class. And then says, okay, Lisa, I'll give you an easy one to start here. Jeremy Irons. And Lisa's like, Jeremy Irons. He's like, well, it can be hard. He's like, here's a ball. You can play with that. And that becomes the thing. I feel like if I went to visit Jazz's family, I would absolutely be Lisa Simpson in that scenario.
They hand you a ball and say, here you go.
I feel like they play anagrams at the dinner table. I mean, yeah, we were sitting around discussing why people didn't like Dune. That I'm fine with. That's a thing. Probably not all, but a fair number of families do. We wondered if it ties into, you know, all the epic aspects of epics versus not. And I'm like, oh my God. I would be the idiot in the room if I was hanging out at Jazz's breakfast table. And then
if they start talking about circus stuff, then you're really lost.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. My participation in any conversation at that table would be a combination of complete silence and absolute made-up bullcrap. Which, now that I'm saying it, is not super different from most conversations.
I was just going to ask. But, yeah.
We're down to 5 questions that has Dane to set us. So y'all should write us some more, please. TheMagicalTalkingHead@gmail.com. We're due one here from Azurtown, because of course. The subject of this is Crimbo, spelled Crimbo. I believe it is a hip way the kids say Christmas. As Helen says, just between us three. So I'm guessing that's him, the hat, and you.
I don't know. Probably you. I don't know.
All right. Best Christmas present this year. Also, what's your best ever? Signed, the Azure Nose Reindeer. And I want to make a point. It says nose, not nosed. Also, nose and reindeer are not capitalized, but the is. So I'm just going to leave that sitting there. This one's impossible. Absolutely impossible.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say.
Because, I mean, quality of gifts is always a weird thing. There are extremes, I suppose, but usually on the bad end. Like, you can get a gift that you're like, this is nothing. This is, you were getting a tank of gas and you saw it next to the cash register and gave it to me. Like, this is clearly nothing to do with anything. But it's complicated. I have had some really thoughtless gifts that I have loved because they were very expensive and were things I already wanted. And there was no thought put into that. In fact, probably somebody told them, get him that. But I still liked it because it was a $X-hundred whatchamahooser. And I really wanted one of those and could not afford it. Meanwhile, there have been some very thoughtful gifts that I'm like, oh, how sweet. And I've set it down. And then 5 years later was like, I clearly need to throw that away. It's in the same spot it was. And my feelings on a gift initially can vary widely from what is later. I have genuinely been super psyched and happy to receive a gift that it turned out I never made use of. And alternatively, I've had gifts that I'm like, eh, whatever. And then by coincidence, I found a good use for it and it became a big deal. It's so hard to say.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't really have, I don't even know what criteria to apply, even to say this year, you know, to things that I got around the holidays that I can construe as gifts, even though, you know, none of them came in a box or was underneath the tree. I don't really have any criteria upon which to judge one as being better than the other. I was grateful for all of them. I liked them all. As far as best ever, it seems to me that what that's always going to, you know, whenever I hear someone talk about the best gift they ever got, the criteria seems to be, does it make a good story? Like, you know, in the Christmas story, when he's talking about getting that BB gun, for the guy who wrote that story or told that story or experienced that, there's a good chance that there are a dozen other criteria where that gun would not even be on the list of his best gifts, but it makes the best story. In fact, he turned it into a novel and it became a movie. So, and most times I ask someone that question or I don't really ask that question. Most times someone tells me that story of the best ever, it's something like that. And I can tell when they're done that they've gotten things that they would consider, you know, better, but this makes the best story.
Or if they are trying to be more genuine, it very much reminds me of, like, if you could be any age in the history of your life, what age would you be? And a lot of people have an answer for that. And mine is always now. Mine is always this age, because it is the accumulation of all that stuff. And before then, I was dumber and I had less of a perspective on things. And as always, I'm not, and it's the same thing to me. So to a certain degree, what's the best gift you ever gotten? The last one I got, probably.
Yeah, sure.
And it'll be beaten by the next one. However, while you were talking and I wasn't listening, I did think of something, and I have spoken about this before, but in sheer terms of my unbridled joy at the time and the genuine value on my life, there is one in particular that stands out. I have talked about it before. 1 year for Christmas, all three of us children got gift certificates to a very successful local bookstore. And we got what at the time was an insane amount of money for books. I want to say it was $75, but that seems low because I bought like 20 books.
Mm.
And I mean, they were all, well, they weren't all actually. Some of them were hardbound omnibuses. A lot of them were paperbacks. But I lost my ever-loving mind. I went down there and I bought all of the books. At the time, I was reading the first trilogy, the Chronicles trilogy, of the Dragonlance series. I bought all the Dragonlance books that were in print at that time, which I believe was 12 or 15, I think, books at the time. Mm. The first two trilogies of which I bought in hardbound omnibus covers. I also bought series two books that I had like read the first book. I just bought the whole series. I spent hours just looking through and I was like, oh, this looks intriguing. I'll buy this entire 5-book series because I could. I bought so many books. I was so excited. Now, I stopped reading Dragonlance midway through the second trilogy. Never went back. Some of these books, I'm not sure I ever got around to reading. I mean, definitely not the rest of the Dragonlance books. Some of these books turned out to suck. So there, its efficacy as a gift in the long run, on a purely practical level, not so great. But the sheer just unbridled joy of go to your favorite bookstore and buy whatever the fuck you want. I spent hours and I would bring them up and we would keep a tally of cost at the front. I'd go back and it was such bliss to me. It was amazing. And it could not be created at this point if my life depended on it. I mean, I have my own money now. When I want to read a book, I buy that book. And I also view the way I do books differently. Two books into a series, I'm not going to buy the remaining 13 anymore right off the top. I mean, I had to think about the other day. I had too many Audible credits and I bought the rest of the Rivers of London thing. And even that made me nervous. And there's only like two I haven't read yet, but I was like, oh, what if they suck? No, it'd be fine. Oh, that's a fun fact. I don't know if anybody is familiar with the author C.S. Friedman. They wrote a trilogy that was kind of interesting that would be hard to explain. But they also wrote a standalone book that I think I've talked about before called This Alien Shore that had a very strong impact on me, and I really enjoyed it. Recently, I was like, do they have an audiobook of that? I should listen to that again because it's been years. I found out not only do they have an audiobook, 2 years ago, that same author wrote a sequel to that book, even though that book is real, real old. So I'm excited about that, but I don't know. I like getting gifts. That is, Trish and I, I've discussed this before. Trish and I don't exchange gifts at Christmas or our anniversary. We will on occasion, like together buy, like we'll take a weekend trip and that's a gift to both of us for our anniversary or whatever. But we don't do that. We still do birthday gifts. They're often very small and they often don't work out great. But the reason is we just like gifts and it doesn't, the cost or the quality, it doesn't matter. It's just fun to be like, I got you a thing. And we like that. I love getting gifts. So what the gift is in a lot of cases matters way less.
Yeah.
One of these days I'm going to turn off that fan and then you won't know if I've frozen it.
You still have to breathe. I can see you breathing. Okay. Are you done?
I am. I'm waiting for you to have things to say.
About gifts?
About this question. You owe Azure Talon that much. After all he's done for you.
Any more to say than I already have said. I like giving people gifts. The times I've received gifts is always very nice. They're always very thoughtful.
All four times. Meaningful.
It happens. When we worked together and you guys, when the team would give me a gift, it was the best thing ever. It was so nice.
We did pretty well on thoughtfulness there, but I think you would have loved it even if we hadn't.
That's true, but you did think it through.
No,
and always got something.
And
really
it is
nice.
Awesome. That moment when you're like, oh, this is great. And the favorite for me is when Trish finds something that I love, but did not yet know existed. Every once in a while, she pulls that off. And it's very cool. And she did really good this year.
But yeah, anytime I get something from Abby, it's great. I've gotten things from you. It's great. Jazz sends things. It's always amazing. She's a very good gift giver. So yeah. But I, you know, as far as picking favorites or whatever, I just don't even really think of it in those terms. And I'm not even sure I know how to, But part of it is what you're saying. It's not really what the thing is, you know, it's the person and the moment and how much, you know, they really put thought into it and, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. It's nice.
And every once in a while I get a really thoughtless gift that, like, when I get it, I'm like, that then it turns out like I use it all the time or something. It does happen. And that's always, that I always find that kind of fun. Like, wow, they did not put any effort in it. I really thought this was a fail, but actually it's pretty cool. So you never can tell. So basically, check yourself, Ezra Talon. You're thinking about gifts wrong. I feel like we're really coming after our listeners who are talking about gifts. They ask us questions and we're like, fuck you. You don't understand. True meaning of Christmas, all that shit. Come on. Look into your heart.
Well, I think it's, you know, we live in such a privileged society. Gift giving is so, you know, there's lots of cultures where gift giving is part of the culture. It's just something you do when you go to someone's house or when you're meeting someone for the first time or when someone important comes and visits. There are places where gift giving is a very specific kind, like the kinds of gifts you give are very specific. Here in the United States, our culture, the, you know, gift giving is at specific times, although you can also do it outside of those times. And it's contextualized as this thing where if you're doing it well, you're thinking about something the person really needs, wants, or is otherwise going to appreciate. So there's a lot of pressure, you know, to do it a certain way. There's no real, subcultures might have rules and things, but the overall American culture doesn't. So it's mostly just this thing we can think of in a very privileged way. Like, we just sort of, the assumption is that if you're an American, you can buy someone any kind of gift anytime. And there's a lot of pressure on you to do it right or whatever.
Yeah.
And then of course you as the receiver, it's your prerogative and privilege to judge whether or not they did it right. You know,
and you
have to be grateful.
It can still be weird. So that 70s show, a show that by funny coincidence has not aged well, had, I would say, a reoccurring theme where the mom of the show was frustrated and confused because the dad of the show would do interpersonal things in a very different way than she thought they should be done because she was a woman and he was a man.
Mm-hmm.
One of these involved the neighbor coming over and giving the dad a pair of shoes. They were very nice shoes and they fit him very well. They were very comfortable. He was freaked out.
Oh. Okay.
And she's like, why? He's like, because it makes no sense. A guy doesn't give another guy a pair of shoes for no, like, it's not my birthday or anything. He just did it. It's weird. It's creepy. And the episode culminates in him going to throw away the shoes because it's just too weird for him. And he and the wife and the neighbor are all out there when this is happening. And eventually the neighbor admits that he bought the shoes and he didn't try them on first and they didn't fit him. And he couldn't return them, so he was giving them off to the other guy because he didn't need them, and he had screwed up. And the dad is like, see, this makes sense. And he kept them after that. He's like, yeah, now I want them. They're great. And she's talking to the neighbor, and she's like, really? That was what? And he's like, of course. It would be weird to just give another guy a pair of shoes. And like, the gender essentialism I am not here for, but sure, that kind of outlook exists in people in this country. Sure. And I always find it kind of amusing. And it's a thing I have to work on. Like, there's a tendency in some people to be like, this is a good thing I'm doing for you. It's happening. You tell me not to, it's still happening. And there is a certain barrier level of, they are naturally very modest or demure, or, you know, they get self-conscious or whatever. And you have to sort of push through, like, oh, you don't have to. No, I want to. I'm really, But there is a point where they're basically saying, I don't like if you do that for me. I will have a net loss of happiness if you do that for me. And at that point, you need to not do that.
Yeah, right.
And some people don't have that. And Trish got really nervous because she knows people like that. Yesterday, Trish and I both had terrible days yesterday. And I was at home. And for weird reasons, I got a craving for a pop. But it was late enough in the day that I'm like, nothing with caffeine. But I was really kind of depressed yesterday. And I was like, oh, this will be good. And so I text Trish and I'm like, can you bring me home a bottle of pop with no sugar and no caffeine? Whatever it is, it's fine. She's like, okay. And then she's like, because they have a little market at ACT. And I'm like, I don't think you're going to be able to find them there because caffeine-free diet sodas are surprisingly hard to find. And she's like, Dr. Pepper, how about that? And I'm like, no, it's got caffeine. She's like, oh, yeah, I just started the thing. She's like, okay, is this close enough? This technically matches, but it's not pop. And finally, I was just like, you know what? Don't bother. And her response was, no, I am bringing you something. To which I said, okay, but please stop asking me about it. It's turning into a stressful thing that I'm not enjoying. But later she was like, I felt really bad. She's like, I sounded too much like other people I know who are like, no, you're getting this thing. And I'm like, no, in this case, it was great. And I'm glad you did it. I did still want it. I just wasn't, it wasn't worth the stress of talking about it. And I didn't want to shop for it. I wanted you to bring me something.
Yeah, right.
But that's a thing. And I've had to learn that with people and try and teach that to other people that sometimes they don't want the gift.
That's right.
Even if it's a thing they like, there may be other reasons they don't want that gift from you. And you do have to push a little bit because there are some people that if you didn't push a little bit, they would never be given anything because they're just that. Well, you're probably a great example. If I was like, I'm going to get you a gift, you'd be like, no, don't do it. You don't need to. Da, 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 da. But I don't think at a certain point you'd be like, seriously, don't give me that. Like, I've got you gifts. You're like, oh, this is very nice. So I have to push a little, but I have to know when to stop because there are some people who are like, I don't want the thing. And that's a tough line to find on people, especially because I think a lot of people don't pay attention to it existing. Parents do a lot of this because parents know what you like in their head and they're going to do it for you. But in reality, parents know what you used to like. Not the same thing.
No.
Both in terms of your taste may have changed and in terms of the situation may have changed.
As you pointed out, as someone who pushes back, I do that. That's my impulse and my habit.
And I don't doubt that it's genuine. You don't do it out of a sense of manners. You do it because, I don't deserve that. I'm a piece of shit.
That's right. It's not quite like that. But when I push back, oh, come on now, maybe a little. So I push back as a matter of habit. And yes, I am sincere about it. The reason I don't persist usually if someone pushes back, you know, is because I immediately try to put myself in their position and think, well, what, you know, how would I feel?
Yeah.
And so then I don't, you know.
And that's the critical flip side of that.
Yeah.
Sometimes people want to do something for me and I'm not like violently opposed to it, but I'm like, I could not give less of a shit. Why are you? Don't bother. But I can tell it means a lot for them to do it.
So
I'm like, cool. Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And the truth is I don't care about the gift at all. And I feel like they wasted their money. But it made them happy, so it wasn't a waste. I'm certainly not gonna be like, well, I think this is dumb, but I guess you don't do that. No, you have to be aware. Think about the other person. In both sides of a gift exchange, always think about the other person.
I guess I've been really lucky to pretty much everything I've ever gotten was cool. So I don't, you know, I remember when I was a kid, there were sometimes I like at Christmas when we, you know, you made fun of me getting tube socks and corn for Christmas and my back home. Never got corn. Did get tube socks a couple times. You know,
we all got tube socks.
Yeah.
We all got tube socks.
But in my adult life, it seems like everything I've ever gotten was pretty cool. You know, I've, there's never been a time where I felt like you were saying someone's wasted their money or whatever. Nah, this
is definitely,
neat. You know,
I've like definitely had some of those where I'm like, wow, you don't know what I like at all.
Yeah. Mostly only when I was a kid.
And I've given some like that. I have given some gifts like that. As I've said, Trish and I famously couldn't get gifts for each other for shit for many, many years into our relationship. It was like a fucking magic trick. We actually would frequently give each other things that we would open it and we'd be excited about, but then we would never use whatever it was forever.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We're getting better now.
I think that's one of the reasons we don't exchange gifts in my family is because it's too hard. It's just too hard to find the right thing. Because we all, if we need or want something, just buy it for ourselves. Again, it's that privilege thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't even know. Either you don't know what the person wants or you don't know what they already have.
Yeah.
So you're, it's
and I mean, even. I'll be totally honest because I know Trish doesn't listen to the podcast. There have been gifts Trish has given me that were service-based. Not, don't get your minds out of the gutter, but like, she's like, I'm going to do this thing for you. And I've been like, cool. And that was many years ago. I did it. And I haven't brought it up. Funny. I mean, I think like after a few months had gone by, I brought it up like once just in case she forgot, but it just never happened. And I'm like, it's fine. Cause that's the other thing. I like getting gifts, but like if I didn't, I think I'd mostly be okay.
Yeah.
Especially outside of my wife. I mean, if my mom didn't send me any gifts, that'd be fine. If my mother-in-law sent a check, that's great. I like the check. I'll use it. But like, if she didn't, that'd be fine. Now, there is probably one gift that really qualifies as the best I've ever got. And it was just this year. And it was a folded piece of paper. On which was written eye protection. And inside was a loose pair of googly eyes.
Well protected.
For no reason. Absolutely no reason. All right. Before this turns into a full hour and a half, because it's getting darn close, we should wrap this up. People, treasure the gifts you give and the gifts you receive. And, buy yourself an hoodie, not affiliated, but maybe if you buy enough of them in like the little sales comment thing, say where you heard about it. And listen again next week, because next week we will talk about these same birthday presents all over again.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.